Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptee podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Sunmi Martin. Thank you for making time for us today, Sunmi, and really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Hello, Simon.
So Sunmi is actually in Berlin. So we've had anybody from Berlin. For me, when Sunmi and we spoke, there's a lot of conversation about Berlin because I spent 3 months there working in a coffee factory in 1986 before the wall came down. But you moved there more recently than that, yeah?
That was 2013, so it's like
2013.
10 years now.
Yeah. So we only missed each other by 27 years in Berlin. So listeners, Sunmi, she's I got so much from our first conversation that we had, and I had so many notes down, and so we had to kind of refresh and say, okay, so what's the frame for today's conversation? And we came up with this topic of an adoptee growth story. So what does adoptee growth mean to you?
Adoptee growth to me means to, it's like a self-discovery journey where we learn so much about ourselves by looking at our wounding from a place of curiosity and compassion instead of self-blame and avoidance, which I did in the beginning when I was younger. And but then really reframing that and looking into our healing as an opportunity to grow from our pain and our suffering.
Yeah. Wow. There's so much in there. There's so much in there. Curiosity is a theme that comes up time and time again on the show. So it and we're curious beings, right? I guess we're seeking in some way. We're looking for answers. Whether that be about our roots, our biological parents, ourselves, and all this stuff. It's all it's on self is a many layered thing, right? And that's, I think, where the curiosity sits. It's across all that space, right? It seems to me anyway. What How would you see that?
Yeah, curiosity for self and on a deeper level, like what, who am I in my identity as an adoptee? I'm also a transracial adoptee, so my roots are in Korea. So it's my cultural identity, but then also what is beyond that, and not limit myself to that. Like, what are my being values? Like, what am I interested in life? What brings me joy? And what brings me fulfillment, and being curious about that, because to me it's like being curious about myself means being curious about life also, like
Wow. I heard something this morning in terms of identity, which a new take on identity, which I thought was fascinating. It was a guy called Muji. Have you come across him? Muji?
Not sure.
MOMOOJI. So he's from the West Indies originally. Or the Caribbean, somewhere in the Caribbean, then went to India. I don't know where he lives now, but he talked about our psychological identity. And I'd never heard that phrase before. But what struck me is that's a really good way of summing up what many of us, including myself, believed we were, you know. So a psychological identity is I guess a cocktail a cocktail of our thoughts and feelings, perhaps. Have you heard that phrase before?
Yeah, I've heard about that. And I what really resonates with me about that is really because, yeah, our feelings, and our thoughts, our mental state, our emotional state, shapes us of how we show up in life. And because, yeah, what I find maybe a bit limiting about the concept of identity when we think about these markers like age or gender or sexual orientation or religious orientation, all of that is helpful. However, it leaves out a big portion of what defines us, which are our actions, like how do I show up in life? And yeah.
I think identity is one of those phrases that's bandied around, and it's such a multi-level thing. And at the same time, when I hear a phrase such as psychological identity this morning, I was thinking about you and our conversation today, and I was thinking, well, I reckon Sun Mi's view of us, our essence, is kind of deeper. It's be or prior to any psychological identity that we pick up. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it just opens some another space, I would say, or another layer that is more going into what is like purpose, finding a sense of purpose in life that goes beyond the ego. And that, I mean, for me in my life, that was a lot about living a purposeful life, like living a life that has meaning, that brings meaning to others, and not just myself. And it took me a long time to get there and to realizing also that, and it was kind of a search for belonging first. It started with like cultural belonging, like needing to first fit in. And we know we were in survival mode and had our coping mechanisms to adapt to our new environment and families and cultures. But then when I was 18, when I looked into the mirror and I awakened to my to this other self that was also looking differently. And that was my cultural identity. And that was the starting point for me to explore myself more. And then I quickly realized, okay, it's important for me to notice that difference, that my eyes look different, that my skin color is different, and that I go back to Korea and connect to my roots. And however, I still felt there is a kind of an incompleteness about my self-understanding. And that was more about how do I want to live my life? Like what means to live a meaningful life that that I can bring joy in also, and that I can find meaning in my work. And that's what led me to start Numaru and offer a community and a place for emotional well-being for other transracial adoptees. And that was a big like pivotal moment for me to realize, oh wow, this is where I can flourish, because all of my self clicks in, like the spiritual self, my body feels excited. I can feel it on a physical level. My mental state, like my mind is really with it. It all of a sudden things make more sense. And yeah, so yeah.
Wow. This is big stuff. A little logistical thing. Can you hear any background noise?
No, I can't.
No?
No.
Okay. That's
No.
good, because we've got a pet pig.
Oh, a pet pig. Okay.
Pig, yeah,
Okay.
who lives in the garden. He doesn't come in the house.
Oh, he's in it.
But
Okay.
he's seen my wife, and he knows it's time for his tin and tea. So he's honking and complaining
Okay.
because he's getting excited about his tea. And I'm thinking, is if Sun Mi can hear this, then so can the listeners. And it's such a funny thing, isn't it? We've got this incredible, you know, like we're talking about a subject of incredible essence and, you know, like beauty, and then we've got the logistical challenges of, you know, what does Buster say? Is Buster? Yeah.
But I think it's a funny side note.
Yeah, it is.
In the garden, or a pet pig.
Pet pig, yeah.
but yeah. I can't hear it, so I guess listeners.
That's good. That's good for you, listeners. Hopefully, you can't hear it. Either.
Yeah.
Have you heard of a guy called Robert Diltz? Have you come across him on your learnings?
I don't think
Robert
so.
Diltz, no.
Yeah.
He has a model for looking at ourselves and who we are, and it breaks it down into making something quite simple, because these what I thought is Dilts, DILTS. What I thought I would do is kind of run through that. Yeah. So when he's looking at, he looks at levels of learning and change. And at the very top of the pyramid is our purpose. Below that comes our identity. Beneath that is our beliefs. Belief that is our behavior. And belief that beneath that is an environment. So I'm just putting that forward as a way of separating this stuff out, because it can get a little bit tricky without a framework, especially if we put in that the identity. We've talked about different element parts of identity, haven't we? So we've talked about psychological identity. We've talked about cultural identity, and so this can get quite complex. How do you see the simplification of this, or is simplification of this important? Am I trying to simplify that something that's am I dumbing this down?
Well, I think simplification. Yeah, it's maybe we can invite some, maybe bringing it back to the personal experience and
also
on a personal level,
because I just
notice my mind like going on, you know, right now when you come with concepts and identity concepts, and yes, we can talk about on a very psychological level about it, and the self and the ego and all,
I like the way you do that. Yeah. Brilliant. Good
and,
idea.
And then a mind is like, oh yeah, but where do I, you know, just trying to categorize or analyze. And I love to invite, some, like bringing it back to the personal meaning.
Beautiful.
And also, especially in regards to our adoptee journey and growth journey that we're talking about, what that means. And especially when we talk about wholeness and what I mentioned earlier, or discovering ourselves in a deeper way, and then finding back to a sense of inner peace and inner belonging. What I realized is that I looked so much outside of myself for belonging, cultural belonging or personal belonging, family belonging. And then we go into all the different types of belonging that are facets of belonging. I'd also to realize, oh, what does it actually mean to find a sense of inner peace and belonging inside of me? Like how does it feel to find a sense of home and inside myself?
Yeah,
and that was a big nourishing
Yeah.
healing moment. And of course it didn't come overnight. As we know, healing is not linear. It comes in waves, and it takes time and patience. But what I realized is that, yeah, when I can be at peace with who I am, and it doesn't mean that I need to be perfect. It's more about that I embrace the light and the shadow, my wounding, and also know my gifts and my talent and everything in between. And to me, that means wholeness, that we can accept and embrace ourselves for who we are, and bring these parts that are wounded and back in with compassion. And again, it doesn't mean that I'm incomplete, or that there's something wrong with me, or that I'm broken. But it means that this is all part of me that defines me. And I last time we spoke about feeling like a puzzle, or I felt like a puzzle for a long time, and there was this big, big puzzle piece missing in my life. Because I was adopted when I was 3.5 years old, and for some adoptees, maybe only 4 months. However, there is this previous life, and that we don't know about. And for me, that felt like a big gap, like a big part of myself, my identity, or my life story is missing. And I felt this as something that's incomplete about me. And I was able to bring that back in, and that piece is still missing. However, I still feel like a sense of wholeness about myself, and that comes a lot with self-worth, and now defining, being more clear who I am and how I want to live my life, and all of these things. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for bringing me back. So are you saying really being at, are you really talking about being at peace while still having those missing pictures, missing parts of the jigsaw?
Yeah. And that has been a journey also to get there, and to be okay that there's parts, this part of my life that I don't know much about, and I'm not in a reunion, so I'm still searching. But I also am okay if that will be unanswered. It, of course, it's still on in my heart and my mind. And again, I don't let it define me or drag me down. And continue to be curious and to learn and grow. Like, and it's also that I feel like, yeah, our growth, like, to that this healing or growing never ends. You know, there's always new things that come up in life that we learn from and grow from. And also in the adoptee experience, I think there's never really a clear end. And it's more like living with that, being with that, also all the negative, or the difficulty that comes with it, and especially the emotions that come with it. Living with grief, something I avoided my grief. I didn't even know I needed to grieve for a long time. And as we know, with adoption trauma, that we are stuck in a survival mode, and we need to, yeah, just learn how to attend to ourselves, and come back into no, I lost my thread, but yeah, come back to self.
Yeah.
And our conversation. But also, yeah, living with the grief,
yeah,
and learning how to be with grief, learning how to be with our pain, and working through the emotional side of it, what it means to be an adoptee, and just knowing that there's support out there and guidance how to do that, which is so helpful to know, because I felt really isolated and overwhelmed with in my experience.
So are you saying at peace with grief as well?
Yeah, and learning just how to be with grief and allowing myself to now, when I have days and I feel sad, and for a lot of times when I was younger, especially when I was a child, like I felt this heaviness and melancholy often, and I just didn't know what this is, and I thought there's something wrong with me that I feel this way. And when I went back to Korea, the first time was really really exciting and amazing, and the second time I was traveling there also in the countryside, and I all of a sudden felt this very spiritual motherland connection, and then my grief came up and it was so strong, and that's when I realized, it really shook me up, and when I realized, okay, there's something happening also in my body. I feel it in my heart, I feel it in my stomach, in my root chakra, like everything was just like my whole system was in this deep grief experience, but consciously for the first time. And when I went back to Germany, that's when I really delved deeper into alternative healing modalities, that because I started cognitive therapy, which was helpful but limiting in a way, in terms of also how to attend to difficult emotions, and then realizing, oh, emotions are energy in motion in the body also. We experience them on a somatic, physical, body-based level, and just learning how to work with it, transform emotions, and be with my grief, and yes, allow myself to cry.
Yeah.
And that was a big one for me, because I avoided and suppressed that for a long time, just to allow myself to cry, and then realizing how liberating that can feel, how when our tears just come out and it's so cleansing, and yes, it feels hurt and painful in that moment, but the after effects and in on my whole system is just so also clarifying and liberating. Yeah.
Wow. When you talk about the grief stuff, what came up for me is I sometimes share the story that I, you know, when I went on my search and reunion, I found out that my birth mother had died a long time before I started looking. And a lot of people will say, you know, I'm so sorry, and you know, and my reaction to that is, my reaction to finding out that she had died was quite kind of okay about it. It didn't hit me like a punch in the guts. And I think it was really because I'd had an experience that involved a lot of the cleansing tears that you talk about, when I got my adoption file and the letters and stuff that I read in with that, and especially the letter about her wanting to me to have this teddy bear from her, which was kind of the start of the start of me coming out of the fog in, what would that be, 16 years ago, getting the letter like 8 years after that, was that those getting the file, the tears that ran down my face kind of cleansed some of that grief.
Mm.
About her. I felt at one with her, and I felt empathy for her. I felt no separation between us. And I share that really because we can be okay without reunion. I think a lot of people talk about having low expectations is a good way to go on the search journey. But then there's also within me there's that great kind of the cultural conditioning that we have here in the West, whether that's Germany, England, or the US, Canada, wherever, that, you know, we've got this "I'll be happy when," and we have a lot riding on that. So I'll be happy when I get the house of my dreams. I'd be happy when I get the car of my dreams. I'd be happy when I get the partner of my dreams. For the non-adoptees, and I'll be happy when I reunite and have a fantastic relationship with my birth mother. So it's not that there's a lot of people that have got to peace without that reunion.
Thank you first for sharing your personal experience and your story, and I agree that being without reunion is a choice that we can also have, because some people might also expect every adoptee wants to search,
yes,
and that's not the truth. And it's totally okay if we decide not to, and it's our choice. It's like, because we can't control it. We can't control it. If we find, I can't control it. If I find my birth mother or parent, or father, and what I can control is my status quo, like how I deal with the grief or how I deal with the separation and the loss. And in a spiritual way, my mother is always with me, and I can feel her presence and her energy in certain moments. And that's been also a very helpful experience to know that her energy is with me.
How do you see this contrast, this juxtaposition between the jigsaw being incomplete, but you feeling whole? Most people would see that as jarring or a discrepancy between those two, between an incomplete jigsaw and a whole person. What does that look like for you? How do those two things fit together?
Yeah. To me, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's okay if it doesn't for someone else.
Yeah.
But just for me, again, wholeness is not about being, because complete, like, okay, the opposite of incomplete would mean complete. And with complete, I would probably attach like perfectionism, or just maybe also societal expectations of being complete and together and defined and perfect. And for me, that's not wholeness in the sense that I understand wholeness. And wholeness for me is more like the meaning of bringing the meaning to it, that how I and the freedom that I get to define it, what the wholeness part is. And it's again like being with my and understanding myself as whole, but that still allows imperfections and shadow and light, and that all can coexist.
So is it then really that incomplete would be somebody else's view, whereas peace and wholeness is your perspective?
Yeah, and it's also a different perspective how we look at things, because incomplete also is coming maybe from a place of lack of self-worth or self-esteem and self-esteem and a scarcity mindset. And so feeling whole is just kind of flipping the script and saying like, okay, I look at the same person, or if it's a structure or an object, you know, like when we think in different ways, and I still see a whole person picture. I'm sitting here in front of you. I feel whole. I don't feel like and that still allows for me to grow and learn. It doesn't mean I'm perfect. Again, it doesn't mean I'm perfect and I'm all there and all set. but it's more like how do I just feel in my body on a mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical level.
Your English is incredible to be able to talk about this stuff at this depth.
Well, I'm trying my best.
Yeah, you're doing great. Doing great. And like, I don't have an answer to that. I don't have an answer to that question. It just strikes me that there is a discrepancy between the potential fight between the incomplete. You know, like I think for me, maybe it's about, you know, like if you could look at a jigsaw that is incomplete, and you could say, I'm at peace with that, or the maybe not all the pieces came in the box, right? Maybe there was a packing error, you know. Maybe there was a packing error when in the fulfillment center, you know, when they were packing up the jigsaw into the boxes and sending them off on Amazon or whatever, you know. You'd be at peace with the missing. You could be at peace, or you could be saying, why are this? I need the missing parts of the jigsaw before I can feel complete. And you'd have that nagging doubt rather than the acceptance that there's been an error. If I'm going to take the metaphor, extend the metaphor further than normally we would do.
Yeah, and that's something that I've also learned through mindfulness work and you know, the just self inquiry and inner child work, and just in my healing journey to be with what is present in the here and the now, and to learn how to be okay with it and to embrace it, and to not feel like, again, either incomplete or I'm not good enough or not worthy enough, but to flip the script, because that is in my agency, in my control. How, not what happens to me, but how I respond to it and how I meet myself, how I can be in a relationship with myself, and how I can be with others, and how this sense of self and how who I am, how that also transcends and inspires others around me, and being in community, and that we know, okay, we're not alone in this journey, is also really helpful to, and also like us, you know, to speak about these things and to share different perspectives, and everyone has their own experience and is an own upbringing that defines us and take on things. And yeah, I'm always curious about that. Like, yeah, shifting perspectives and also questioning my own. But at the end, it's also like coming back to also then what resonates with me and what is meaningful for me in my experience. Yeah.
So you mentioned that a couple of words there. You said self-inquiry. What's that? What's self-inquiry?
Well, it's like in being all again leading with curiosity of like, who am I, and what defines me, and what pain might be there. To deeper look at that, be with it, work through it, transform it, and make sense of what happened to me, make sense of my story. And learn more about myself on these various levels. And again, like speaking of the mental level, like trying to understand certain concepts and ideas, where I'm from, what behavior I have, that yes, I'm a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist and all these things that we as adoptees have learned to survive with, but on a mental level, but also bringing in the physical level, how do I feel in my body? What sensations are actually there when I feel something, when I feel shame, when I feel anger or grief or sadness? And then the emotional level, yeah, and the spiritual level, like all these levels that we of self-inquiry, like for me, that have been profoundly giving a lot of answers to questions I had and anchoring me deeper into a self-understanding as an adoptee, but also as a woman of color, as a creative person, food enthusiast, a partner, like a daughter, like all these other hats that we are wearing. Yeah.
What holds that? What holds that together, or what's at the what's underneath all the levels, or is it the whole thing?
Underneath the levels,
what's it, you talked about levels, so is there something
oh, it's not like in a hierarchy.
No,
it's okay. More like body, mind, spirit, you okay. know, and how this all comes together, and inquiring that.
Yeah.
So that's for me, like on a deep level, that where we can learn so much about ourselves, and what are my interests also, what brings me joy, and how do I want to live my life. I realized that I love nature. Nature brings me a lot of healing and connection to myself, where I find really peace. And I love to forage for wild herbs. I love to bike in nature, or go hiking in the mountains, swimming, like all of these activities that I have integrated a lot more in my life in the past years. It's a big, big part of my healing and growth, being in nature. So just exploring these things that bring me joy, my creative self. I have a background in the creative industry, and I was drawing a lot as a child. I came just some years ago back to that. And now it's also a way to access my emotions on a different level when I just draw or paint and creating with my hands. Like, I love to just be crafty. So just these things, like, also I had to explore that and test it out. Oh, does it actually bring me joy? Or like cooking, and or like different Reiki energy healing, or sound baths, like all these things, just to explore them and see, is it something that I want to integrate more into my life or not? Yeah.
So you work a lot with other adoptees now, helping them heal, but that you were keen to say that wasn't like healing, like some people think, it's like energy healing. So how would you describe your work with other adoptees?
Yeah, it's about care, connection, and also creation. So it's the care part is really caring for self and also others. That's a big form of, like, how do I, self-care, how do I actually take care of myself, my needs, and my wants also. But often it starts with actually creating space for self, which me included, I used to be taking care a lot of other people and being busy with that and neglecting my own needs for that. And now self-care has become an integral part in my life, creating space for myself. And the connect part is really building community.
Yeah.
So it's a international community with adoptees from the US, UK, Europe. And the create part is about, for creative workshops and activities, how can we learn more about ourselves and bring all these different pieces together in a meaningful way, and exchange also, like, within the community. And my mission is really to create safe spaces where we can connect and share and learn and grow in togetherness.
So they sound like great experiences. I'm wondering, is there anything that it sounds like it's something that needs to be experienced, rather than something that makes sense when it's described? I'm wondering, is there anything that any sort of like thought experiment or anything that we could do together in a couple of minutes to help me on that, so that the listeners get a feel for this stuff? Or does it have to be done within a bigger framework?
So there's different offerings, but because one is being in a group and
experience.
That would be a group experience, to be in a safe space and talk about a specific topic, what belonging means to you. And then in one-on-ones, it's we could do a mindful moment together.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. That'd be
brilliant, yeah. And maybe just to arrive at a moment, like a restorative moment together, maybe that's to bring some a moment of peace.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I invite you to close your eyes.
Don't close your eyes and play along with me if you're driving, listeners. Okay. But
you can do
what Sunmi asked me to do, play along.
Yeah. Okay. So please be in a safe setting.
Yeah.
And best is also close the door and get comfortable where you are, and on your pillow or grab a blanket, but to really allow yourself to either lower your gaze or even close your eyes, only if that feels comfortable to you. And just sink in to this present moment. feeling the touch points of the chair or sofa that you're sitting or lying on. Really feeling the surface beneath you, supporting you. Yourself to sink deeper into that support. Allowing your forehead to soften. Your jaw is relaxed. Tongue sits comfortably in your mouth. And drop away your shoulders, your ears. And just notice your breath without control. Breathing in through your nose, and breathing out through your mouth. Your mind is wandering. It's okay. Just bring your attention back to your breath. You can come back later to anything that needs attention. And just notice how this breath is wandering throughout your body, nourishing you. Inviting some new, fresh energy. And releasing anything that doesn't serve you right now with every exhalation. And repeat this mantra with me, silently or openly. I am here. I am safe. I belong. Allowing the feeling, the sensation, just to be with you. Right here, right now. And feel your spine lift a little bit. upwards towards the sky. Inviting deeper breathing. Invite you to take the last three breaths together, breathing in through your nose and breathing out through your mouth. Second time, inhaling, exhaling. One last round, inhaling, feel your spine lifting. And exhaling. Inviting some movement, wiggle your toes, your fingers. Finding movement back in the body where it feels comfortable. And then slowly orienting yourself back into the space. To your own space first.
Wow.
In the space together. Yeah.
Wow. What a beautiful... What a beautiful thing. The melting of the mind. Yeah. The melting of the mind into the heart or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really inviting this these moments of inner stillness, and it's sometimes challenging when we're not used to that. But I think when we're invited into a safe space, and it's maybe easier to drop in. To do that and to be guided. And but that's what I this is like a mindfulness practice that I include in my sessions, but then it's a lot also about sharing and talking and sometimes it's also draw like creative exercises, drawing about our emotional states. And in my retreats it's also light body movement and cooking together and collaging, so and nature immersion, so it's all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Sunmi, and I'd encourage you listeners, if what Sunmi says is resonating for you, then check out her links in the show notes and connect with her, have a look around her website and get in touch. So
yeah, come into. You can connect with me also either on Instagram or from my website, and also send me an email and come into the membership also in the Namara Heart Space app and platform, where you can explore a lot more circles. And or if you're interested in one-on-one, I'm here just to connect and share.
Brilliant.
And grow and togetherness. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Sunmi. Thank you, listeners. And we will speak to you again very soon. Bye-bye.